Sorry, can you just pass me that litre bottle of Gaviscon? Oh, and a straw as well. Hello and welcome back to Multifaceted Mama. It's been a very long time since I last recorded and I don't feel like I can own the name Multifaceted Mama yet because I'm not really living up to my name at all. It has been a crazy last few weeks or months, I should say. The last time I recorded, I was in my first trimester, still riding the wave of all this sickness and a very long list of symptoms. And I'm now 22 and a half weeks, almost 23 weeks, in my second trimester. So yeah, a lot of time has passed and I have a lot that I want to cover today. So sit back and relax and enjoy the next 20 or 30 minutes or so. Now, I would say Happy New Year, but we are well and truly into January as I'm recording this. So I don't think that even after the third, you can really go around saying Happy New Year. It's no longer that relevant. But funny enough, today is Blue Monday, which is meant to be the most depressing Monday of the year. And I actually feel good today. So yeah, it's not really a Blue Monday for me. I always feel so much better when I get up and I am productive first thing in the morning. And if I kind of have a slower morning, then that's when I start to feel a bit glum. So this morning I made sure I got up, I walked my dog, and then I actually went to a spin class. I haven't been doing that much exercise throughout my pregnancy, but it definitely does help, especially my mental health. And it always has done, to be honest. But throughout pregnancy, in the first trimester particularly, I didn't push myself because I was feeling so crap. But now that I have got a little bit more energy back, getting to the gym really does boost me and make me feel good. I must say, I am a lot more breathless, even just walking, than I usually would be. And I am quite a fit and healthy person, or so I think I am. But I do find that I am very breathless and I get breathless quickly. So my advice would be to anybody that's pregnant and thinking of going to the gym or is a gym bunny anyway, just kind of listen to your body. And I know it's so cliche to say, but we are growing life and it takes it out of you. And so if you can't, you know, keep up with everyone else in the class, then just kind of go at your own pace. And that's what I do. I'm not saying I don't push myself, because I definitely did push myself this morning in spin and I felt good for it. But I am very wary of straining myself, because even sometimes I can be sitting down on the bed or just sitting down on the sofa. And if I get up too quickly, I get a real sharp pain in sort of like my lower abdomen. And I've been told that this is normal. I've spoken to a midwife about it and I've asked a few other women about it, and I can't remember what it's called now, but there's a name for it. So I'm very wary of not to move too quickly and like not strain that area. So it's been Christmas, it's been New Year, so much has happened. I'm well into the second trimester now. And I can say, going on from my last podcast or my last episode, is that it does get better. So it's not all a big lie. Actually, some of what people tell you is true. I do feel a lot better than I did in the first trimester. The sickness hasn't stayed, thankfully, because I really do not know how I would have got through the next few months feeling that sick. I honestly don't know how these women do it that suffer with hyperemesis gravidarum. Honestly, it must be so awful. And if that is you and you're listening, then I really feel for you, because feeling nausea like that is terrible. Obviously, I'm not asymptomatic. I do have a lot of new wonderful symptoms that have appeared in my second trimester, but they are a lot more manageable. I will actually talk a little bit about some of my symptoms in this, but don't worry, it's not going to be a whole podcast moaning about symptoms in the second trimester. I've got a lot more content that I want to get out. So over Christmas, we did a gender reveal. I actually booked a private gender scan, because I'm just quite impatient, and I just thought that it'd be really nice to get the family together. It was Christmas Day, and do a gender reveal together. One thing I did say was I didn't want to make Christmas Day about me and the baby, but my mother-in-law was really sweet and said, well, that's all we're going to be talking about anyway, so let's definitely do it. And it was really nice because we had some of my partner's family down from up north, so they were there for the reveal. And it was just a really nice way of doing it. It was very Instagrammable, and yes, it is on Instagram. So if you haven't already, head to Multifaceted Mama and you'll be able to watch the gender reveal there. I did buy Canons and do a cheesy reveal. it was just, yeah, it was something I wanted to do, and we both agreed it would be a nice thing to do. So that's what we did. We went and had a private scan. We were told to look away from the screen as it might have been obvious to us. Although half the time when you're having a scan, I don't know what I'm looking at. I have to be told what each bit is. And I was so convinced that I saw a willy various times. It must have been the cord, thinking back, because we are having a girl. So I definitely didn't see a willy. And I've actually had it confirmed to me twice now that it is a girl. So it definitely is, unless on the day of me going into labour, I get a huge surprise and I get a little boy, but that's very unlikely now. But yeah, I ordered these Canons off of Instagram. So yeah, I ordered these Canons. I actually gave my friend the task of ordering them so that I wouldn't know, obviously, what colour she was getting. I was going away on holiday. We went to Dubai for a week, and I asked her if she would order them just in time for Christmas. So we went away a week before Christmas, and they arrived to her house. And lucky that I did get her to order them, because she said that they turned up with a sticker on telling you what the gender was. So that would have been no good. So I'm very glad that I did get her to do it. But it was really hard not to ask her questions, and knowing that she was the only person that knew what I was carrying was quite difficult sometimes. But yeah, so one of the Canons didn't actually pop, which you can go and see on the video. It was such a shame. It was really stiff. Either that or I just couldn't do it. Nevertheless, it was amazing and it was so cute. And there was pink powder and confetti everywhere. And our dog went absolutely mental running around in circles. It was really funny. It was as if he was celebrating it with us. So yeah, it was a really nice thing to do. Everyone made like a little bit of a bet on whether it was a boy or a girl. Quite an impatient person, so I definitely couldn't have waited. If you are looking to do a bit of a big gender reveal, then there are loads of suggestions on Pinterest and stuff, but the Canons is definitely a nice idea. Either that, or when you book a private scan, some places actually put a blue or a pink light on. They light up the room depending on what you're having, which I thought is really nice if you want a bit more of an intimate reveal, just you and your partner or something. I thought that was really sweet. So maybe next time I'll do something a little bit more private. So Christmas was really nice, despite the fact that I'm quite off meat at the moment, and Christmas normally involves a lot of meat, doesn't it? I can manage a little bit of turkey or a little bit of chicken, but it's so bizarre, and I really have struggled trying to explain this to other people, because most people just have a metallic taste in their mouth or just a heightened sense of smell. But there's one smell that just seems to follow me everywhere, and I know it follows me because when we went to Dubai, I smelt it there too, and it's in restaurants, it's everywhere. It could even be in a house, but I constantly have this weird smell that I... Talking to my brother, he suggested that it could be maybe a protein of a meat, because I am really off of meat at the moment. It's not something that appeals to me at all. So I wonder if it's something to do with that. And actually, the other day when we cooked up some chicken for my dog, it smelled so strong to me, and not a chicken normal smell. It was very odd. I can't even explain the smell, but I smell it everywhere. So I think it's meat that's doing it. So it's quite interesting not having loads of meat over Christmas. I'm not a huge meat eater anyway, so that's fine. But I did find that lots of people were buying me non-alcoholic drinks, and there was one that I enjoyed, and it was more of like a pear and appetizer fizzy drink, and it was in a fancy bottle that resembled Prosecco, which was actually really, really nice. But the no secco, which everyone talks about and recommends, it's not nice. I had quite a few bottles bought for me and I bought some myself and I didn't enjoy it. It tastes very funny. And again, I think when you're pregnant, your smell is heightened. There was something in the no secco that just didn't smell that great. So after, I think I had one bottle over Christmas and sort of wasted the other few. So if you are looking for alternatives or you've got a special occasion coming up, I would steer clear of any of the like no seccos or non-alcoholic or any sort of kind of liqueur that's been made to resemble a drink. I think you're just better off buying really nice juices, nice soda water. And then one of the things that I have been struggling with a little bit throughout the second trimester is indigestion, heartburn, and acid reflux. Now, it was particularly bad when we were on holiday, and I think it was because I was overeating. And let's be honest, over the Christmas period, we all indulge a little bit anyway. But I found that being pregnant, I couldn't push myself. You know, when on Christmas Day, you're stuffed, but you just keep going because you're like, well, it's Christmas. Like, of course, I'm going to still eat chocolate and cheese and have a turkey sandwich after I've had my dinner. But actually, when you're so full and you're pregnant, it literally is like, it's painful to keep eating. And I had to really learn to manage my portions a bit. So not having a huge Christmas dinner because I can't cope with feeling that indigestion and heartburn and all the rest of it. And when we were in Dubai, even after having like sometimes just a drink or a smoothie, I'd be really uncomfortable. It felt like my stomach was expanding, like someone was blowing a balloon up in my stomach. These are all things that I've discussed with my midwife and doctor, and I've been given the all clear. I've been told that it is just part and parcel of pregnancy. So if this is something that you're experiencing, then don't be alarmed. I think it is some of the symptoms that some people do get. Sort of this indigestion, heartburn and acid, and then this weird smell. And then that's it, just a few aches and pains and other bits, but nothing compared to the first trimester. So yeah, if you're in the first trimester struggling, just wait till you get to the second bit, because it does get easier and you do get more energy. I'm starting to feel a little bit more tired now at almost 23 weeks. So I think, yeah, by the third trimester, I'll start feeling that fatigue again, like in the first trimester. But yeah, it definitely does get better. So hang on in there. Whilst we were on holiday in Dubai, I was reading my second parenting book, or my second mummy book. And I'm not going to be a textbook mum, but I definitely am interested in, you know, absorbing what I can and taking bits and bobs from, you know, different resources, because why not? There is a lot of information out there and a lot of information on social media, and it can be somewhat overwhelming. So I think you just have to take little nuggets of information that are relevant to you and will work for you. But at the end of the day, I've been told so many times, when that baby comes, you'll know what to do. You've carried him or her for 9 months and it will be mother's instinct. And if it's not, then you just go with the flow and you work it out. I mean, I don't feel prepared at all. I'm definitely going to be winging this motherhood. But I have booked some antenatal classes, which are due to start in March. So I've got a while. I thought it was quite late, but apparently that's the done thing. So I'm due at the end of May and the classes start at the end of March. So it doesn't really give us that much time, but I think it is probably best off to do the classes as close to your due date as possible so that you're absorbing all the information and you've got it there fresh in your head. Because if baby brain is a thing, which I can tell you it definitely is, then I will forget everything if I started now. So the first pregnancy book I read was a book called Expecting Better by Emily Oster. I think that's how you pronounce it. But this was recommended to me on Peanut by so many women. And it is a really good read. It's quite research heavy and there's like a lot of statistics in there, but it's all for a good cause. It's because she's speaking about all the symptoms and all the things that you expect in pregnancy and like the research behind it. So you know that, you know, it's not just a woman reeling off a load of facts and figures without knowing her stuff. Like, she definitely knows what she's talking about. So it is really good, really insightful. So I definitely recommend that. And actually, it's really got me thinking about how I want labour to be for me and some of my options. And that's not something that I've given much thought to. I know some women are completely in control of that and have a plan from day dot. But it's not something that I've done or I'm looking to do, because I think from hearing so many stories now about labour and different births, I think anything can happen. There's, you know, so many plans and things that you can put in place and then it all goes out the window. So I'm trying to be a little bit more relaxed in that I will have a few things in mind that I would like to happen, but if they don't, I'm not going to be really upset about it, because we just want the baby out and safe and all the rest of it. So yeah, I don't think it's something that you can overplan. But from reading this book, I've really started thinking about an epidural and pain relief and things like that. And one of the things she discusses in this book, I've just got it here, is being induced. And I didn't really give much thought to this either, but it's not actually something that many women want to happen. And I didn't realise why until reading this book. But obviously you want labour to happen naturally. So being induced and having all these hormones flooded into your system to induce you isn't the preferred method. So she talks about all different ways of trying to naturally induce yourself, if you like. So that was really insightful and not something that I knew about before. And then she speaks in depth about the epidural and she gives lots of stats and lots of facts and figures. And actually, from reading the chapter on the epidural, for now, I've decided that I want to try and have my baby without having an epidural. I know so many people will be listening and thinking, oh my God, absolutely not. Because an epidural, it provides pain relief. And obviously, you don't know how much pain you're going to be in. I think that my pain threshold is really high, but I've never been in labour. I've never pushed a baby out of my vagina. So, you know, I could be wrong. I might not have a good pain threshold. So I won't know, I guess, until the day. But if I can avoid it, I'm going to try and avoid it based on the things that I'm going to read out to you now. So obviously the positive impacts of an epidural is that it provides better pain relief. And now the negative impacts are a greater use of instruments, so forceps or vacuuming delivery. So apparently, once you have the epidural, it then numbs you, doesn't it, from like the waist down. And what that can do is just affect like your ability to push. So not all the time, but a lot of the time, they have to intervene and use forceps or vacuum, one of those vacuum sucker things. And all of these things are just, I think, are quite stressful and a little bit traumatic for the baby especially. So if we can avoid using these instruments, then, well, I think anybody would rather not have those instruments used, but it just all depends on the day, doesn't it? But also another negative impact is that there can be a greater use of cesarean. So because you are pushing for a longer time, there's a higher chance of low maternal blood pressure, less able to walk after labour, greater chance of needing a catheter, increased chance of fever during labour. So they're all kind of the negative things that she talks about. Some of them I was aware of, some of them I wasn't. And just reading all the research around it, yeah, I just think if I can and I put up with the pain, then I'm going to try and not have an epidural. Obviously, don't quote me on this, because if shit hits the fan and I'm in a world of pain, I might be screaming for it. So yeah, don't quote me on that. And also don't let me put you off. If an epidural is part of your birth plan, then so be it. I think the majority of women do have an epidural, so it's not necessarily a bad thing at all. And once again, like, everyone's births and pain threshold is different, so you've just got to do what works for you. So for the time being, I don't have a birth plan at all, really. And I remember when I first was filling out the form online, when I first found out I was pregnant, and they ask you on the referral form what your birth plan is. And I just remember thinking, I'm just trying to get my head around being pregnant, let alone how I'm going to give birth. And then someone recently asked me if I was nervous and apprehensive about giving birth. And I think because it's quite a while away, like I've still got a good 4 months to go, or less actually, but I don't feel too nervous. I mean, I'm saying this now, but I'm sure if you asked me come May, I might feel a little bit more anxious than I do now in January. But no, I feel okay about it. And I am going to do a little bit of hypnobirthing as well. I get a free course of hypnobirthing with the antenatal classes that I've bought. And the ones that we have chosen are bump to baby. I'm not sure if they have them all over England, but I know they are dotted around. And we did opt for the ones that you pay for, and they were quite pricey, but they sound really good. And you get a free hypnobirthing class. And I think there's some stuff on breastfeeding too as well. And now breastfeeding is another thing that I haven't yet looked into that much. It is something that I want to do, especially in the beginning. I don't know yet how long for. And again, I think this all depends on your birth and how you're feeling, and if you can produce enough milk, and yeah, if you're able to, basically. I think this is something else that you can't really overplan for, because you just don't know what's going to happen. And I do know quite a few people that have got quite upset at the fact that they can't breastfeed and they really wanted to, and they gave it a good go. But I just think you can only do your best, and a fed baby is best, not a breastfed one. I know there are loads of pros to breastfeeding, which is why I really want to try it myself. I'm not sure about long term, just because I am still doing my master's, which again is something that I don't know if I'll be able to continue doing, or if I will defer the year when the baby comes. Yeah, it all depends on your lifestyle, doesn't it? And if you can actually produce enough milk, etc. So it's a huge topic, and I'm going to do a lot of research on it, and I'll actually include an episode on breastfeeding. I know there's a lot of judgment around it, and it's something that people are quite passionate about. So it'd be quite interesting actually to ask maybe a few women and get their opinions on it, and perhaps reach out to someone who's qualified to talk a bit more in depth about breastfeeding, because it's definitely a big area that I want to explore and read up about. For now, I'm thinking that I would like to try and combi feed, which is where you do breastfeeding and bottle feeding. But again, you can't overplan, because the baby might not take the bottle, or the baby might not latch properly. So there's all these things that could happen. So I'm kind of just trying to go with the flow a little bit and see what happens. But this is definitely a topic and a big area of interest. So before I sort of start wrapping this episode up, I did just want to recommend another book that I started reading when I was on holiday in Dubai, and I actually gave it to my boyfriend to read as well. So I would read a chapter and then he would read a chapter. And honestly, I think it's got to be one of the best books I've picked up. I'd even recommend it to people that don't have children or aren't looking to have children, or yeah, just anyone really, because it really makes you reflect on your own childhood and how you were parented, and whether that's a good thing or not, because I know that can be triggering for so many people. Yeah, it just kind of puts your childhood into perspective, and it's a very interesting read. So that one's called The Book You Wish Your Parents Had Read and Your Children Would Be Glad That You Did, and that's by Philippa Perry. And I'm really enjoying that, and I've nearly finished it. And it's definitely made me think about the type of parent I want to be. And I have emphasised that I don't want to be a textbook mum. This book for me has just put my childhood into perspective and some of the ways that I was parented. There's definitely certain things that I won't be doing with my children. And I think it is easier said than done. And I think we can all make plans for how we want to parent our children. And then when they're here, it's a little bit different. This book just really makes you think about how to validate the child's emotions. And to be honest, because I'm studying social work, there's so many links to social work, things like the attachment theory and bonding with your baby. Yeah, I just think that there's a lot to be said about just validating their emotions, and they're small humans at the end of the day. And Philippa gives loads of examples of like different stories of relationships between children and their parents, and things that have worked and things that haven't worked, and just how to manage like tantrums and conflicts and just anything that can arise. And it's just about building like a really amazing relationship with your little one and just trying to understand them, because let's be honest, they're born into this crazy world where they can't communicate, they can't walk, they need everything doing for them. And although that can be really hard and stressful on the parent, it's hard for them too. They're just trying to express themselves, and the only way they can do that in the beginning is through like crying or screaming or, yeah. So it's a really interesting read. And if you are looking for a book about parenting, then I definitely recommend this one. I feel like I've rambled on and on now, so I am going to love you and leave you all. My dog has just climbed onto my lap as well, which means it's time to go walkies, dare I say. He definitely thinks he's a baby. If you haven't seen, head to my Instagram and have a look. He's a Cavapoo-shon and he is my pride and joy. But my God, are we going to have a few jealousy issues, I think, when baby arrives. Hopefully not. I'm hoping he'll be okay, but this dog definitely thinks he's a human baby. He's very needy and very affectionate. But thank you so much for listening. Please do subscribe and give me a rating. It's really, really helpful for the purpose of bumping my podcast up and making other people and other first-time mums know that I am here. So yeah, please do subscribe, give me a rating, and look out for the next one.